It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn about a comprehensive citywide development plan in Minneapolis known as the 2040 Plan and ideas about land use changes that Wisconsin communities could consider to address housing affordability and equity. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Bill Lindeke is a lecturer at the University of Minnesota, where he teaches classes on planning, Twin Cities geography, transit suburbia, and municipal financing, writes the Cityscape opinion column for MinPost, the nonprofit news organization. Bill, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
So Minneapolis approves this 2040 plan about 5 years ago. And, you know, the city and the plan, they're praised for creating this innovative approach to zoning and development. What is unique about the plan? What stands out?
Well, it was pretty ambitious. It's part of this thing we have in the Twin Cities, a regional government called the Metropolitan Council, and requires every city to update their plan once every 10 years. So this wasn't something that was out of the blue. They have to do it every 10 years by law here in the Twin Cities, just like all 100 plus municipalities do. But in the 2040 plan, city leaders decided that they were going to be more ambitious. So they did a few things that caught the attention of a lot of people with their 10-year update, and that was eliminating single-family restrictive zoning in the city. Most cities in the country have whole big areas of their city where you can only build a single-family house, and that's one of the things they got rid of in Minneapolis as part of this process. The other things they did are kind of smaller and weren't in the headlines as much, but things like eliminating parking requirements, the idea that you have to build a off-street parking lot when you build a restaurant or an apartment building, or other things like upzoning along places that have transit access, so allowing new construction to have taller buildings. And so Minneapolis did that systematically as part of this 10-year update, and it really changed the zoning map for the city.
So, you know, Wisconsin is also grappling with housing, a housing shortage. What is problematic about single-family zoning?
Well, it's very exclusive, so it increases the costs of housing for people and reduces the kind of choices people have. I mean, there are big trends in our society. People are having fewer children. There are more single people. There's more older adults. You need a more wider diversity of housing types. The other big trend is, of course, as you know, rising housing costs all across the country in Wisconsin and Minneapolis. And so if you can figure out a way to build housing more affordably and having a duplex or a triplex or a small apartment building, that's a great way to do it. Because you have a lot of efficiency with the construction costs. So all those things were goals of the plan.
You have such a close eye on how Minneapolis is changing, how it looks now. I mean, I'm a Minneapolis native, and every time I go back, I sometimes can't even recognize where I came from. How drastically is the 2040 plan altering single-family neighborhoods?
Well, not very drastically is the answer. When this was being debated and passed in 2019, and it passed with a 12-1 vote at the city council, it received wide support from our elected officials. There were signs in people's yards saying, "Don't bulldoze our neighborhoods." But now, a few years later, the single family housing and the duplex changes hasn't led to big differences. There have been 72 new duplexes and 37 triplexes with three units in them in 2.5 years with the 2040 plan in place. The big difference has been sort of apartment buildings being built with less parking along these transit corridors, especially in places near, for example, downtown Minneapolis or near the University of Minnesota where I teach. So that's probably those neighborhoods where you don't really recognize what it used to look like.
Can the city take down existing homes through this plan?
No, that's also a misconception. So no one's going to come bulldoze your house unless you sell it to somebody, and then they might. But there's no eminent domain power involved here. It's just a zoning change.
It's just a zoning change. So, you know, how much community engagement has there been, I wonder, in the more recent years of this plan rolling out? I mean, how much has this been fueled by community discussions?
Well, the city spent a lot of time, years actually, talking to people. The first step they did was to, in 2016, go to the city council and have them identify 14 goals or values that would drive the change. And they adopted that in 2016. And the first goal was to eliminate disparities. Minneapolis, like Milwaukee, are places that have very wide gaps in homeownership between white families and black families. It's about 75%. Homeownership rate for white people in the Twin Cities area and less than 25% for black families. And that gap is the highest in the country. So that's something that nobody here is proud of and really wanted to change with this plan. So that was the first step of engagement. And then there were hundreds of small scale or large scale public meetings. The hearing at the city council was over 5 hours long, and I've watched all of it, and it was a very contentious debate. But when you got down to it back in 2019, it was a pretty overwhelming vote to support this zoning change.
Has this plan been able to hold down the cost of housing? Has it been able to hold down the rise in cost of rent, for instance?
Well, that's the key question, isn't it? But it's really hard to study that because there's so many variables that go into the housing market. The Pew Charitable Trust just came out with a report about how it has actually kept rents from rising in Minneapolis, the city. They increased housing stocks, the amount of homes, by 12% in a five-year period from 2017 to 22, and rents only went up 1% during that time, which is way below the national average and the Minnesota state average. But on the other hand, 2040 was only in place for a few of those years, and there's a lot of variables that went into that. For example, COVID is a huge unknown factor.
Bill Lindeke is an urban studies lecturer at the University of Minnesota. As we discuss city planning and zoning, you can call in with a question. You can share your thoughts at any point, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Minneapolis 2040 plan is a blueprint to shape how the city to our west will grow and change in years to come. And through this plan, Minneapolis was lauded as the first large city nationwide to eliminate single-family zoning. But the plan faces a legal challenge, which we'll talk about. Be part of the discussion. Call in with the question, share comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. We have Bill Lindeke, who is an urban geographer at University of Minnesota. So, Bill, several groups sued the city after the 2040 plan went into effect, and then a judge invalidated the plan. What arguments are opponents making against this plan?
Well, it was a case where the judge, the Minneapolis city attorney, tried to get it thrown out on a technicality. It's unusual for a comprehensive plan, which happen every 10 years. There's hundreds of them all around the state to be challenged. But there's a piece of legislation in Minnesota called the Minnesota Environmental Rights Act that's been around for over 50 years, and it's designed to prevent pollution and disturbance of environmental sustainable places. And so it's never been used to challenge zoning changes before. And that's what happened in this case. There was a group, one of them was called the Citizens Concern for Migratory Birds. They actually popped up when the Viking Stadium was constructed because they didn't use bird safe glass when they were constructing the large facade of the stadium. Mm-hmm. And another group that I don't think is very legitimate that came in and challenged the comprehensive plan on environmental grounds. So that hadn't been done, and it turned out that no one knew what would happen. And so this judge ruled in favor of the people the environmentalists in this case to stop the plan from taking place.
But does this action of striking down this plan help to create more policy awareness around environmental concerns?
Lots of environmental groups were supportive of the 2040 plan for lots of good reasons, in my opinion. There's increasing density in Minneapolis is good for climate change and climate action, reducing our carbon footprints, getting more people able to ride transit or walk to a store or to school or to work. These are the kinds of the goals that we need to be doing in the Twin Cities and around the country to take action on climate change, for example. So most environmental groups in the Twin Cities were supportive, but then this lawsuit is around. And what happened was the judge in this district court here put the plan on hold. So for the last year or so, people who are trying to build housing in Minneapolis have to use the old map instead of the one that was passed in 2019. And that has put a lot of projects in limbo.
Should a city's long-range development plans be considered sustainable at the outset as a given without, you know, further independent environmental review, do you think?
Well, that is a great question. But I think in general, the kinds of laws that we have on the books to deal with pollution should not really be applied to city zoning, which is a much more mundane everyday activity. And people are not pollution. People live in homes. In California, for example, there's a similar law called CEQA that has been used to stop things like enrollment at the University of California. What they did there is to make it so that zoning and other kinds of things are exempt from these environmental review processes, because the housing crisis in California is much worse than it is in Minneapolis. And there's currently legislation in Minnesota at the Capitol right now to try to make comprehensive plan changes immune to this environmental review. But that doesn't help Minneapolis in 2024, because they're still dealing with this lawsuit.
So Minneapolis is facing challenges just like cities here in Wisconsin and around the country. As you mentioned, a lack of housing, inequality, homelessness, the consequences of climate change. Would the 2040 plan make progress in dealing with these issues?
I think it would. I think it has already. A good example, too, in St. Paul, where I live, they have passed a similar version of this. So we got rid of single family zoning in St. Paul. We didn't get as much attention for it, but that's fine.
That's how it goes in St. Paul.
It is. So I think it's really important for cities to be taking these kinds of actions to reduce the cost of housing and try to make some progress on these really important issues that you mentioned. Homelessness and housing costs are such a burden for most Americans.
What is your advice to communities that want to write their own, you know, development plans, their own 2045 plans, their own long-range planning? Is there something you can say about what has happened with the 2040 plan that could help us here in Wisconsin as we look to these long-range plans?
Well, I think framing things so that we are aware of how restrictive our rules are around zoning in our cities. Most places in Madison and Milwaukee, you can only build a certain kind of housing, and we need to be more flexible about how we live. And so that's a big goal. I think the other thing is to look at state policies, statewide policies around stuff like parking requirements. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to me if you have a new restaurant in your neighborhood that they have to buy a house and tear it down and make a surface parking lot next to it. Just as a matter of course. And most cities in the country have rules about things like that. If we want to take climate action and reduce the cost of housing, we need to look at these rules that have been on the books for 100 years that aren't doing anyone any good.
We're talking about housing development and zoning plans. Bill Lindeke teaches planning and Twin Cities geography, transit, suburbia, municipal financing at the University of Minnesota. Call in with a question. You can share your comments at 800-642-1234. So, Bill, how could the fate of the 2040 plan affect what cities, you know, in other parts of the country and in Wisconsin do to address these problems?
Well, I think Minneapolis did a really excellent job with this plan, despite the outcome at the moment, because they captured a lot of attention and raised this awareness about things like single-family restrictive zoning, so that it allowed cities like St. Paul, like I said, to come in and kind of do the same thing with a lot less scrutiny and a lot less legal challenges. And so I think that's the model. I think we need to see other cities in Wisconsin, all around the country, to start following Minneapolis's path. And I think it'll help reduce housing costs. I think it'll help us come together around climate action to make it possible to have more sustainable choices in your daily life. The other thing that the plan did was to change some of the zoning rules so that you could have a corner store closer to your house, for example. There's a movement all around the country to kind of see these changes being done statewide. So I'll be really curious to see how the Wisconsin legislature maybe starts to look at some statewide zoning reforms that could happen in the future.
How much of this plan do you think is about less land consumption per person at the end of the day?
In a city like the Twin Cities, you have this trade-off because we're growing and there's people who want to move here. There's a huge labor shortage, and so we need more housing for people. And so where is that housing going to be built? It could be built way out at the edge of town where everybody has to drive everywhere, or you could build some right in the middle of Minneapolis or St. Paul, right next to a light rail line, for example, where you just have a lot more choices and flexibility about how you get around and whether you can go to a restaurant a block away, things like that. And so the more we can increase the choices for people and allow them to make decisions about how to live, I think that's the goal for cities in the future.
72 new duplexes. Do you see, aside from the litigation here, and we only have a few seconds, but do you see additional multiplex housing coming onto the cityscape in Minneapolis?
Well, yeah, those duplexes are just the ones in the single family zoning change. There's been a lot of apartment construction. So they added over 10% to the housing stock in a 5-year period. And so that's really been the one that's making the difference. The duplexes are nice, though, too, because it increases density in a smaller scale way that people are more comfortable with in your neighborhood. I live next to a duplex. I'm staring at it out my window right now, and it's fine.
Bill, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Kate.
Bill Lindeke is a lecturer at the University of Minnesota, writes the Cityscape Opinion column for MinnPost, a nonprofit news organization. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.